from the studios of WAER.
And he's standing up into the goal line. Touchdown, Syracuse.
Battle gets a screen, pull up, he's good. Tyus Battle from 20 feet, and with 2.5 on the clock, Syracuse leads by one.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside. He scores the game winner. Give the assist to Don Madonna. Syracuse wins 11-10.
Comes the Ostrom Avenue podcast.
To Boeheim, quick trigger three from the top. He knocks it down, and we're tied at Spectrum Center.
15 left. He shoots and scores. Tucker Dordovic.
Perhaps the biggest upset in program history comes on Friday the 13th.
And now, your hosts, Brendan Mortensen and Owen Valentine.
Welcome into episode 10 of the Ostrom Avenue podcast. We made it to double digits. That's pretty cool. I'm Brendan Mortensen alongside Owen Valentine. We are joined by the illegally parked JD Rocci.
So only slightly. Very slightly illegally parked. My back bumper is slightly hovering over a small part of a driveway. But it also snowed a bunch, so like not many people are driving.
Yeah, you're good.
I'm probably fine. I really hope I'm fine.
That's the case
we'll
for the
FBI.
We'll
see if there's a nice ticket on my dash when I come out.
We'll leave that one to the FBI. I'm not one to decide that. Today we're talking a little Syracuse basketball. We're recapping last week's loss, not very good loss to Virginia, only 34 points in that game. And we're talking a little bit about lineups, potential lineups going forward, if the lineup against Virginia worked. I mean, I don't think it worked, but if that's the lineup that we could see going forward. So, Owen, I'll start with you. What did you see out of the starting five against Virginia that worked? What did you see that didn't work?
Well, first and foremost, starting five against Virginia, Jalen Carey, Buddy Boeheim at guard, Hughes and Dolezal at the forwards, and Sidibe playing the five, which was a bit of a twist because all preseason long during the exhibitions, it was Guerrier playing the four, not Dolezal. So to see him kind of pop into the starting lineup said something about the way Guerrier was playing. And JD, I think we remember we were watching that warm-up and that shoot-around before everyone got there.
I mean, Quincy Guerrier couldn't
hit
the brides on
an
the
eight-footer.
Barn. It was bad.
He was just taking
short baseline jumpers, and it was not going well. So I don't know if it was a product of the fact that he wasn't shooting well in warm-ups, because I thought he played really well at the end of the last exhibition against Carleton. He had his best half of what we saw non-Italy-wise in terms of what he did in that game. I mean, he had something like 8 points, a couple boards as well. It was really impressive what he did. I don't hate having Marek Dolezal start.
No.
I think it's fine. It wouldn't be my ideal starting lineup, which we'll get into in a little bit later. But, I mean, it's fine. Put some veteran leadership out there against a really tough opponent in Virginia. But it was overall a little bit weird just because it kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Definitely, I don't think anyone was really expecting that switch, especially as you were saying, when you look at how well he played in the second half of the last exhibition. But it makes a little bit of sense. You don't want to throw Guerrier right into the fire.
You're
with
throwing him to the
a
wolves,
defense
right.
as strong as Virginia, so maybe you want to roll with that experience in Dolezal just because he's played against this defense multiple times before, and that could provide, you know, maybe a little bit of a spark. Maybe he knows enough to be able to provide a little bit more offense. Obviously, it didn't work.
No, well,
but
I'm not
maybe,
sure he does.
Maybe there was some thought process behind that, and there was a little bit more rationale than you can see at the surface level.
When I'm looking at this starting five, I understand the rationale of starting Dolezal, because I think when you're playing Virginia, when you've got guys down low like Diakite, Braxton Key is a wing, but we know how good of a rebounder he is, and then Jay Huff as well, that's not really a situation where you can play small ball. I think if you're putting Guerrier out there instead of Dolezal, Guerrier, to me at least, seems like more of a slasher, seems like more of somebody who is more comfortable on the outside, whereas Dolezal, even though he's not the biggest guy in the world, I think he's a little better down low than Guerrier probably will be. That's the impression I've gotten so far from the exhibition games. JD, have you seen anything different?
The big thing with Quincy Guerrier is I think he is the most physical guy on the team. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably the strongest guy on the team because the five certainly aren't the strongest. I mean,
no.
Barama Sidibe did not play well, and Jesse Edwards came in at the end, actually scored a point, so 2 points.
Yeah.
One of only two freshmen to score in the game, so that was, I guess, good. But the five is a real, real bad spot, because if Barama Sidibe can't play better than he did against Virginia, then this team is in big trouble because they have no answer at the five. So going back to my original point, though, with Quincy Guerrier, I think he might be the best rebounder on the team once things get going here, because Barama Sidibe can't rebound very well. Marek Dolezal, however you want to say it, he has never been a big rebound guy despite being a legit 6'10", because he's not super physical.
He did lead the team in rebounds in this game, though, with 9.
He played the most minutes of any big. He played all 40. He and Elijah Hughes were the only guys to play every minute in this game, kind of that Tyus Battle, O'Shea Brissett kind of role. Yep. But I don't know. The rebounding could be an issue. It was an issue at the beginning of the game, and it was an issue throughout the rest of the game as well, against UVA, who has some of the bigger guys in the ACC, like you said, in Mamadi Diakite and Jay Huff, and Braxton Keyes, their best rebounder, and he's not even their biggest guy. So, I don't know. I like Quincy Guerrier because I think he can rebound. He just didn't do it. I also don't think he played very much. He didn't play very many minutes in that opening game against UVA. So, we'll see how his minutes change against Colgate and against Seattle this upcoming week, and we'll see where things kind of go from there.
There's definitely kind of that learning curve going alongside a lot of these freshmen, whereas I think those minutes can grow depending on how they adjust and how they adapt. Gary, I thought, would get more minutes in this one, but based on the way he played and what we saw in warmups, I'm not too disappointed in the number of minutes he got. He didn't do anything to really say, wow, he should have stayed on the court. But two of the biggest takeaways that I had, at least, is going into the game, we had questions about the guard play, especially in the point guard play, and we had questions about the center. And Jalen Carey and Barama Sidibe just did not live up to the hype and did not prove any of the doubters wrong. They both played just a really weak game and combined for 4 points.
Joe Girard III is a two guard by trade. Traditionally, his skill set is a little bit more suited to the two guard. And he played the most point guard of anybody on the team. He played more than Bryson Goodine. He played more than Jalen Carey. I don't have a problem with that, because after what I saw against Carlton from JG3, I'm pretty confident this kid can still score at this level. I understand Carlton's not the level of Virginia, but I think this Colgate game coming up soon here will be indicative of what JG3 can really do. But the fact that you have to play a two guard that didn't play, I mean, he played ball dominant in high school because he scored 50 points a game and he was the best player in the state by a wide margin. But still having him run an intricate college style offense against college level defenses, that's not a great sign. Like, Jalen Carey just has to be better. He has to turn the ball over less. He has to be more efficient with his shots. Everything has to be better from him. And then I've already talked about the fact that I find it hard to have some faith in Barama Sidibe at this point. I understand it was the first game of the season. It was against the defending national champions, the best defense in the country. But he just really hasn't shown me anything in 3 years. Like, I'm not sure I can get behind him being the starting center.
First points of the game, Barama Sidibe, after some nice motion, makes a really nice play and an athletic finish. And I was like, okay. Barama's here to play. Maybe this is going to be a breakout year, breakout game for him.
Feeds Sidibe inside, fighting against Wall to Tensai. That's up and in. Syracuse scores first nearly 2 minutes into the game. Barama Sidibe cleans up on the glass.
He disappeared.
Those were his only points of the game. I don't understand how, as a 6'10 center, you can play 22 minutes of a basketball game and only get 2 rebounds. That says a lot about the way he plays. He plays a little bit weak. He picked up 2 early fouls, and he played nervous and on his heels the rest of the game. We were sitting courtside, JD, for the coverage of this one. You were hosting the game. I was reporting. And the guy in front of us says, does he know how to jump?
I didn't hear that, but that's...
And I started... Jeez. I was laughing.
Yikes.
Because the whole second half, I think it was just him terrified of breaking back into that I'm always in foul trouble situation, that he just kind of stood there.
He is always in foul trouble. I mean, it's the same thing Pascal Chukwu had last year, too. Chukwu would get in foul trouble pretty quickly in the early going, and then you disappear. You haven't had – I actually looked back at this a couple of weeks ago. They haven't had a really good center that you could rely on consistently.
Since what, Rakeem Christmas?
Since Rakeem Christmas in like 20 – and even him, like the first 3 years were like, And then that senior year, he scored like 18 and became an NBA draft pick. Uh-huh. And you were like, oh my goodness, Rakeem Christmas, where'd you come from? Mm-hmm. But I mean, they've had Tyler Roberson play the five. He was one of those guys. He's one of those traditional Boeheim's doghouse guys, kind of climbed his way out. Then you thought, oh, Taurean Thompson's going to be the center of the future. That's great. Then Kevin Willard comes in and possibly, allegedly, maybe tampers with him and gets him to come to Seton Hall.
Possibly, allegedly, maybe.
Now, I mean, he got suspended 2 games, but, I mean, you know, the investigation's not over. I don't want to be making any assumptions, but...
Another case for the FBI.
There's a lot of cases for the FBI in college basketball, but I just think you look at the way this team has operated at the center position the last 4 years with Pascal Chukwu and then now Bahram Sidibe. Pascal would have his games. Barama has had, like, maybe 1 or 2 games. But, like, Pascal, I don't know. You just haven't – you can't just dump the ball in there and say, hey, go score a basket.
No.
It just – it doesn't work.
And it reflects in the offense. There's not enough motion. You can't go in to go out. You can't have someone simply post up. There are so many factors that are limited because of the play of the centers. And if you look especially at last season, that iso ball mentality, not really able to get the ball moving, just kind of passing around the arc irrelevantly – that is a direct reflection of the lack of trust and the lack of ability in the center play.
I remember we were talking before the Virginia game, and I said, all right, you need to have 3 centers on this team because it's not a matter of if Sidibe will get into foul trouble. It's a matter of when and how quickly. Sidibe, 4 fouls in this game in 22 minutes. I mean, come on. Dude just fouls more than he does anything else. His points and rebounds combined, he had 4. Personal fouls, 4. I mean, that's just, it's
not good.
It could
definitely be better. Could definitely be better.
One could say.
And looking at
the guards as well, looking at the minutes, Joe Girard ends up with 22, Jalen Carey only with 18. They each shoot 1 of 6 from the field. Girard with 3 points, Carey with 2. Carey did have 5 boards, Girard didn't have any, but, I mean, you're not asking Joe Girard to get boards. And then Girard did have 2 assists. So, JD, I'll ask you, you said earlier that Girard is more comfortable at the 2. That's what he is by trade.
I think so, yeah.
Are you comfortable with Joe Girard running the point guard for this team?
Right now, probably not, because we're 1 game into his college career. I have a little bit more faith that Jalen Carey can get things moving. I still think Jalen Carey has a ton of potential.
He's really
good. He's a former top 40 recruit. Like, there's a reason he was so highly touted. There is potential there. It's just cleaning up the little things. I think, too, a lot of it last year, kind of getting his confidence shaken by being a member of the Boeheim doghouse and getting kind of pulled pretty often when he came into the game. That certainly doesn't help matters. Right now, I'd say stick with Jalen Carey. I'd say see what he does. I mean, again, he was going up against – everybody was going up against the #1 defense in the country, and especially the point guards. Kihei Clark is maybe the most underrated defender in college basketball.
Oh, my God.
Because he's 5'9", but he's unbelievable.
He put his name on the map.
He is all over the place all the time. He's incredible defensively. He almost had a triple-double with points and rebounds and assists. Like, it was crazy how good he played. So I think I have a little bit more leeway with a guy like Jalen Carey than I do with a guy like Bahram Sidibe because I see more potential in Carey.
Yep.
I see more skill in Carey, and I see the fact that he was really affected by Virginia a little bit more than Barama was. So I'd stick right now with Jalen Carey. By the end of the year, I think it's totally possible Joe Girard is the starting point guard, unless we see a step up from Jalen Carey, because you look at what he did at MSG last year, the 26 against UConn, and then he followed that up with 14 against Oregon. Two good teams and on the biggest stage of his young career. Those are the kinds of games and the kind of potential that he has. So let's keep riding with that potential for a little bit longer, especially in the non-conference when the competition isn't quite as good. Then we'll reevaluate once we get to conference play. I mean, if Joe Girard is playing lights out and he's being the guy that everybody hopes he can be and he's kind of starting to fill that GMAC role that so many people are just begging for him to fill, which I don't know how accurate that's going to be, but, you know, that's something that people are saying. If he's doing that and Jalen Carey's dipping a little bit, make a switch. I mean, you saw the minutes. Just based on the minutes, Jim Boeheim seemed to like Joe Girard, what he was doing, 4 minutes better than he liked what he saw from Jalen Carey. So, I don't know. Stick with Carey for now, but I'm certainly not discounting the possibility that Joe Girard III is the starter for this team come ACC play and toward the end of ACC play.
Top of the key, Gerard triple up off back iron, and it bounces in. That spent forever in the air, but Joe Gerard has his first college bucket.
My big thing with Carey is everyone results back to the MSG performance. Rightfully so, those were his two best games of the season. But in terms of him being a point guard, he had a 1-8 assist to turnover ratio in that tournament. He is not that point guard right now.
He too. He's not
a traditional point guard.
Yeah, he's
no.
not a traditional point guard either. He's more of a combo guard.
Like, yeah.
But I think he's more suited.
He needs
suited.
To kind of fall into that role, though. I need
right.
him to play as a true point guard because he has the pieces to be able to succeed in doing that this year. I don't need him to take that corner three that he chucked up off the side of the backboard.
That's
a
not
contested
great.
Three.
Could have been better.
If he's open, you can shoot. He's got the ability to shoot if he's open. But that hitch in the top of his jump shot
yeah,
is,
it's not
is
great.
Something that could definitely be exploited.
He has to be more open than most
yeah.
to take a three. Number one, there's that small hitch in his shot. I don't even want to call it a hitch. It's more like a hesitation. He
yeah.
like takes an extra second to release at the top
mm-hmm.
of his jump. And then number two, that's not his best skill by far.
No.
He's a get-to-the-bucket, let's-score-off-the-bounce kind of guy.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see him do a little bit more of that. I just don't – I mean, there really isn't – I don't know, is there a true point guard on this team? Like, Joe Gerard, I think, is more of an off-ball guard because he wants to catch and shoot, and that's his biggest skill.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Carey is more of a slasher, not much of a distributor. And then your other point guard potential guy is Bryson Goodine. I guess he's a point guard, but even he could be considered a shooting guard.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's more of – he's probably the most traditional point guard on the team, but you don't really have a traditional point guard. I don't think that's necessary in college basketball anymore.
No.
But certainly a guy that can distribute. I mean, you look at a guy like Cassius Winston at Michigan State, he's not necessarily a traditional point guard. He's their best offensive player, but he's still a good distributor.
Yeah.
And that's what Syracuse needs. You can be as good on offense as you want to be, but if you can't move the ball, then this offense is going to go nowhere because they're not talented enough to just beat everybody off the dribble like a Duke or a Michigan State is.
A 48-34 loss to Virginia to open up the season is a tough way to look at the lineup and say, okay, this is the lineup we need going forward.
Yeah.
But looking at the remaining schedule up until pretty much the end of December, January 4th is the first ACC, the beginning of like the ACC slate. That's when Syracuse takes on Notre Dame. Until then, you've got games against Colgate, Seattle, Cornell, Bucknell, Oklahoma State coming
up.
Lots of Nels. And I think that's where you really figure out what this lineup is. So, Owen, over the next however many weeks up until the beginning of January, what is your ideal lineup for the Syracuse team?
I think the ideal lineup is it's almost the way they were running in the exhibitions. And I don't think that that's going to be the immediate lineup. I think Guerrier is going to need a little bit of time to be starter ready, and Dolezal is going to have inflated minutes until that's figured out. And if it's not, then Dolezal will continue to have the inflated minutes, because even though he doesn't necessarily perform to the level that you'd want to see out of this position, he does the job good enough, which is not what you want, but it's kind of that fallback that they could end up stuck with if Guerrier can't figure things out. I do think that Jesse Edwards has the potential to be a decent factor off the bench.
Boeheim to Dolezal, pump fakes a three, drives down the right alley on Clark, picks up his dribble, handoff, Edwards tries a floater, off back iron and good for Jesse Edwards, first points of the night. Syracuse has passed 30 points, they're to 32.
I don't think he can start.
Raw.
Correct. He's very raw. And he's going to be able to figure some things out during the non-conference slate. I don't know if it'll be enough for him to be really effective come ACC time, but when Sidibe is playing as poorly as he is, there's not that big of a drop-off to Edwards.
The one thing I will say, I'm going to go over to the Mellow Center, I think, and just force-feed the fives steak and potatoes. Like, they've all got to put on weight. Like,
yes.
Mark's got to put on weight. Barama's got to put on weight. Jesse Edwards and John Bolajak, they've got to put on, like, somebody's got to be big down there. There's nobody big on this team. Like, Quincy Guerrier is the heaviest guy on this team. He's 220 pounds in terms of, like, where he is, like, body, like, height to weight ratio. He's, like, the biggest guy.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Who's the last true big Syracuse has played? Coleman?
Yeah, probably. And he was hurt all the time.
Yeah. So maybe you go back to like Rick Jackson or Renze Onuwaku, that kind of.
I mean, it's been a while. Like, I'm not saying we need like Rick Jackson, like, let's thunder through everybody. I'm just saying like Syracuse needs like, I don't know, something more than what the, to be, toothpicks, really is what they're sending out there right now. Like, I understand, like, I for the life of me couldn't be in the shape that those guys are in. Like, no. Believe me when I tell you that, but like, find a way, I know, put on muscle, somehow, because none of these guys are good enough rebounders as they are right now with their body types to be effective against guys that they're going to go up against in ACC play. Because if you can't rebound, I mean, we'll see how it goes against Colgate and Seattle in terms of rebounding and physicality, but if you can't rebound against those guys, you're not going to be able to rebound against the rest of the ACC.
Dolezal put on some muscle mass in the summer.
He put on 5 pounds.
I don't see it.
He looks better.
I don't see
it. He looks better. I mean, I just want just small improvements, just something a little bit more. But in terms of the ideal lineup that you were talking about, Owen, I don't know. It's just frustrating watching this team for me because I'm like, sometimes I'm like, ooh, that lineup looks good. Like, they've had a couple of good offensive possessions in a row, and then they'll do something stupid on defense, and then or they'll be playing great defense and they can't hit a bucket. I hesitate. I don't know, maybe because I don't think Joe Girard played that well in the Virginia game. He really didn't.
The thing about him was he was just confident, and it worked.
And that's good.
And he got the offense going better than Jalen Carey did.
Yeah, so I think my ideal lineup right now, there was one other one that kind of stuck out to me that I don't remember. I don't know if you're going to remember, Owen. I think you and I were talking about it. Somebody was talking about it, and I was looking at a lineup, and it was a little bit different than the one I'm about to say now, but I like that one too. But I think the ideal lineup right now, are we talking ideal lineup in terms of who should start, or ideal lineup like these are the guys I want on the floor for crunch time?
Who should start, but I think along with that, if you're not starting a guy like Dolezal, I'd throw in the fact that maybe you're having Dolezal come off the bench and play 25, 30 minutes.
Yeah, so I think for me right now, see, the point guard's really a sticking point for me because I really do like Jalen Carey, but I like a lot better what Joe Girard has done. I'll say right now Jalen Carey is your ideal starting point guard for now. That could certainly change in a few weeks' time by the time we roll around. To when the calendar flips over. I'll say Jalen Carey, Buddy Boeheim's an obvious starting two. I think Elijah Hughes is an obvious starting three. Those are the two guys that should be in any starting lineup you put out there because, frankly, they're the two best players on the team, which the fact that Buddy Boeheim's the second best player on the team right now, that might be indicative of how things are going. But, I mean, I saw a tweet actually during or before the Virginia game, and it was like, Buddy Boeheim's your second best player on a Power 5 team. Like, that says a lot about where Syracuse is at.
Yeah.
And, like, I love Buddy and think he's really good and think he has the potential to be something special in terms of being a four-year player, which he almost certainly will be.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's your quote-unquote second best player, not necessarily talent-wise, I think there are guys more talented on this team than him. But
I agree.
In terms of what he's doing right now, he's the second best player. So I'd have Jalen Carey, pretty much exactly what we've seen so far. I'd probably go Quincy Guerrier at the four, and then I'd start Marek Dolezal at the five. I really just have no faith in Barama Sidibe. I really don't. I guess my first man off the bench, Joe, would be the first guy off the bench.
Yeah.
I also think Robert Braswell should get some run.
There
like,
we go.
Completely agree.
He's athletic. Agree. He can shoot it. Like, just give him something. He can rebound. He's a great jumper. Like, I don't know. Just give him some run. Like, the fact that he didn't play against UVA is a little bit confusing to me, considering how many problems they were having. Like, just throw him out there. Like, he played really well. Yeah, I mean, you're already down by, like, 20. Things are already going poorly. You might as well just see what you can do. Like, just throw him out there, see what happens. He played really well against Damon. So, I mean, let's see Robert Braswell play against Colgate. Let's see him play against Seattle. What has he got? Like, he had something against Damon, didn't have it against Carleton. What's he got? Because I still think there is some there's something there. Play him. Just play him.
I still have so much faith in Jalen Carey. It's probably misplaced.
I have a lot of faith, too.
I loved this kid as a freshman. I think he has so much potential. So I'm going to start my lineup with Jalen Carey at the point guard spot because I want that bench lineup of Bryson Goodine and JG3. That's who I want at the guards coming off the bench. But I want to start with Jalen Carey at the one. Again, two and three, you've got to start Buddy Boeheim and Elijah Hughes. At the four, I'm starting Quincy Guerrier. And at the five, I'm starting Jesse Edwards.
Really?
I know he's
starting
not
a
ready.
True freshman at the five. I mean,
I know he's not ready. But Barama
Sidibe, he's
Sidibe,
really not. He's not ready at all.
I don't think he is. But I would rather play Jesse Edwards and say, go prove to me that you are the center, the future center of this basketball team. I would rather play Jesse Edwards than play Barama Sidibe at this point. Because Barama Sidibe has had 3 years, both behind Pascal Chukwu, coming off the bench and now starting, to say, all right, go be the center for this team. And he consistently just isn't proving anything.
Yeah, he's just underperformed. The only problem I have with Jesse Edwards starting, I just feel, and I'm not trying to compare these two in terms of talent or in terms of potential, but you saw what happened with Fab Mello in his freshman season at Syracuse. He was the starting five. He was the big piece in that recruiting class. And Jim Boeheim says, okay, kind of what you're saying, go prove that you're the center of the future for this team. He'd mess it up in the first, like, 3 minutes, and he'd be pulled immediately. He's yanked off. Like, that just debilitated Fab Mello for that entire freshman season. Luckily, they built him back up so he could have a great sophomore year. And obviously, you know, things did not end the way we were hoping they would for Fab Mello. But I just think that it's going to be, especially for a guy that hasn't been playing basketball for too long, just like Fab Mello did, quite frankly, when he moved up to Florida from Brazil and when Jesse moved to Florida from the Netherlands. Like, these are guys that haven't been playing that long, are very raw, have potential, but, like, that's going to be a huge – if he gets pulled immediately, like, that's going to be a huge confidence. Like, that's not going to be good for morale him mentally.
I could go on a – I could have a five-hour podcast about me ranting about how much I hate the Boeheim mentality of pull him after
doghouse,
one turnover.
Baby.
I could rant about that forever. That is my least favorite thing that Jim Boeheim does.
It's not good.
Is the pull him after one turnover, put him in the doghouse mentality.
I mean, to be fair, but he's done it to everybody. Like, when Buddy was terrible in non-conference.
I cannot stand it.
When Buddy was terrible in non-conference play, and I mean quite literally could not hit a three, like shot like 17% in the non-con in terms of three-point shooting, Jim wasn't leaving him out there. He wasn't like, oh, it's my kid, I'll leave him out there. Like, he does it to everybody. At least he's consistent.
My one thing, Brendan, is this is the collegiate level. And it's a former perennial powerhouse for a little while.
Former
it's
powerhouse.
It was. You look for.
It's just no. It's just sad.
They had a 10-year span.
Yes, they were unreal.
Span.
Yeah,
they were outstanding.
They were the class.
And it's not there. And when you look at talent at this level and performances at this level, you should not have as long of a leash as you did in high school, or as you should not be able to make three turnovers without any negative repercussions. Jim Boeheim treats everyone the same in this aspect. If you're playing poorly, you'll hear it from him, and you'll get pulled off the court to tell him. And that's something that I think if you commit to play basketball at Syracuse, you know. You know that you are going to play, ideally, close to perfect basketball. You want to play that flawless game, and if you don't, then you're going to be told
that's not how the game works.
If you can't mentally take playing badly and getting pulled because of it, then you should not be playing college basketball.
I can't get started in this because I will go,
we'll go
crazy about it. But circling back to my point with Jesse Edwards and why I think he should start at the center position is because I think once you get into ACC play, I don't think you can start Dolezal at the center. I think you can get away with it in the non-con, and you can start him for a while. I'm not even saying play Jesse Edwards 20, 30 minutes. I'm just saying I think you start Jesse Edwards. I think you see how he does. If he's not playing well, then fine. Go with small ball. Go with Dolezal at the five. Not pull him right away. Don't put him in the doghouse right away, because I think that's an awful way to do it. But my thinking with Jesse Edwards is that if you play him and he performs well, I think he gives you a better chance to win than Barama Sidibe, and I think he gives you a better chance to win in ACC play against bigger centers than Dolezal would. And if he doesn't play well, then you find something else that might work. You see if you can play Dolezal at the five. Heck, you can see if you can play Guerrier at the five. I mean, he's not a five, but if he's the best rebounder on this team, go small ball. See what works. I don't know what's going to work at this point.
Going 6'7" at the five, like, unless he's Bonzi Colson, like, I'm really not sure that works.
I'm just so.
And he's not as big as Bonzi Colson. I think Bonzi even was, like, 6'9".
I don't think they should put Gary at the five at any means. But I just have such little faith in Sidibe and what he's done. The only thing that Sidibe has proved to me that he is good at is fouling.
Let me just.
So why are you playing him?
You ever need to, you know, foul at the end of the game.
He's great for that.
Barama Sidibe
put him in right away.
Your guy.
My big thing with this team and the personnel is that the starting five is not necessarily the most relevant thing.
Because there's such equity
in a lot of these players in terms of Carey and Gerard could have a good day on any day. And the same goes for Guerrier and Dolezal. And there are a couple other guys that could be a spark and have a strong performance off the bench with Sidibe and Edwards. There's a lot of skill parallel, potential parallel, and, you know, strong performance parallels in terms of you've got your starter and your backup who could equally likely have a chance to play a strong game. So it doesn't necessarily matter who the starting five is. It's the ability to gauge who your best five are on that given night. And I think that's where you're going to be making quick subs and pulling people in and out and testing different lineups, especially in the non-conference slate, because you've got the pieces to be able to have five different lineups that could work at any given situation. And that's something that could be very beneficial for Syracuse.
And that you're going back to your point that the starting lineup really doesn't matter that much. I agree with you, and that's very Jim Boeheim-esque. Like, you look at what he did, 4 years ago when Daywon Coleman's a senior. Like, Daywon starts every game. He doesn't play very much in every game,
right,
but he's out there to start.
Minutes.
Right, and then Tyler Roberson comes in, or Tyler Lydon slides over to the five, or whoever you slide into that center spot.
Well, that's because Coleman was told he would start every game, and he did.
He technically did.
That's a whole nother podcast. The journey of Daywon Coleman.
We're
from
just
Jamesville
coming up with podcast
DeWitt,
ideas here.
From Jamesville DeWitt to like irrelevance as a senior, and a lot of it, of course, is injuries.
He plays for the Stallions now, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so. What is that? The ABA that they call it now, the Syracuse Stallions. They were like ridiculously good last
almost
year.
Almost won like the national championship.
Yeah, it was very impressive. Good for them. And
there he goes.
I'm
just
not discounting
4 years removed from his college career. He's winning national championships.
I'm not discounting what Daywon Coleman was as a player at JD, because he was. I mean, he took the world by storm. He wouldn't have been a 5-star recruit and one of the biggest. One of the biggest recruits in program history if he wasn't good. I mean, he was certainly good. It just, he never really panned out on the college level, and that's, a lot of it is the knees, and Barama Sidibe is similar, although with a lot less hype. But
Daywon Coleman update, he has since left the Stallions, and he is playing for a professional team in Slovenia.
All right.
Oh, that's good. International's better than whatever he was playing over here. So
sounds like a better payday.
That's a step up. I wonder if he's still doing his clothing line. I know that was a big thing for him. I'm serious. Like, he had a clothing line. It was pretty cool, honestly.
All right. Daywon Coleman, clothing ambassador.
Anyway.
To Slovenia.
To Slovenia.
The people out in Slovenia love Daywon Coleman's clothes.
Let's look a little bit at this Colgate game tonight. JD, you're on the call for it. Shameless plug.
Yes.
What
Listen.
Are you expecting lineup-wise for Syracuse? Who are you expecting? Who are you hoping will step up for Syracuse in this game to hopefully score more than 34 points?
Who am I looking for to step up? Anybody that's not named Elijah Hughes, because I think Elijah will have a good game. And quite frankly, Elijah wasn't very good against Virginia. He was 4 of 14. It's just that the fact that he scored double digits, and that was...
He was just better than everybody
else. I mean, really, anybody can step up. It really doesn't matter. I think Joe Girard has the potential to have a good game because Colgate's a smaller defensive team, and he probably is matched up with somebody that's a little bit more his size and is not going to get up into him, even though Kihei Clark's 5'9", and he played unbelievable defense, which we already talked about. But in terms of what I'm looking for tonight... This is a Colgate team that's like pretty good. Like, they made the NCAA tournament last year.
And
they
back.
Pushed Tennessee to the brink last year. Like, they returned 4 of their 5 starters. They returned like 75% of their scoring. A really good 3-point shooting team. Like, this is a dangerous Colgate team. Like, is Syracuse going to have a hangover from Virginia and come out slow? Because if they come out slow, Colgate last year, without guys developing a whole extra year, pushed Syracuse to the limit in the first half. I think they were down by 4 at halftime, and I think they have the potential to do it again. I think Matt Langel, their head coach, is a really good young up and coming head coach. They pushed a really good Tennessee to the brink in the NCAA tournament.
Played well against Clemson last week too.
Yeah, I mean there's potential here for this Colgate team. I'd like to see Syracuse go deep in tonight in terms of how many guys they bring off the bench.
Yeah.
Colgate's only going to play seven guys. They're going to play their starting five, and then they'll play Keegan Records as well as Jack Ferguson off the bench, and that's really it. They're not going to play a ton of guys. So if Syracuse can wear them down and keep fresh legs in there while Colgate is kind of running out the same seven guys and really the same five or six guys for most of the game, I think that'll be important. Guys to watch in terms of what Colgate can do. Rapalus Ivanauskas is probably their best player. He was awful against Syracuse last year. Like, yes. Really not good against Syracuse, but in general, a really fantastic basketball player. Patriot League Player of the Year, honorable mention All-American, Division I Transfer of the Year last year. He transferred from Northwestern, so he's in his second season at Colgate right now in terms of playing. Jordan Burns, their point guard, is probably their second-best player. I mean, there's a lot of, like, there are three guys at in this starting five that are really dangerous and can give Syracuse some issues. Jordan Burns was great against Syracuse. He had like 35 against Tennessee in the tournament. He was unbelievable
in
that
game. He was crazy.
He was really, really good. And then the third guy is a guy that's top 10 all-time in program history in scoring. He was their best player for his first 2 years, and now has kind of taken a little bit of a backseat to Ivanauskas and Burns, but that's Will Raymond. Excellent three-point shooter. They were a top 10 three-point shooting team in the country last year. They shot at 40% from deep as a team, and Rapalus is their starting center. He can shoot it, and he's not even really a center. He's a forward that plays center. They play basically four guards in Rapalus Ivanauskas. Raymond's kind of a forward. Anyways, I digress. But every single guy in their starting lineup can shoot the three ball at a very efficient clip. Mm-hmm. So, like, you've got to defend the three, and the zone cannot be sunk in because they're not going to try to go inside very much. It's got to extend out, and you got to close down on the shooters, especially with that expanded three-point line and the ability to have more space now.
And you didn't even mention Tucker Richardson for Colgate.
Another great shooter.
Who led the team in scoring against Clemson.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are a lot of guys that can really, really step up and play. Like, this is the best Colgate team that Syracuse has played in a while. Colgate hasn't beat Syracuse since 1962. Tonight, there's potential for them to do it because they are talented and they do have pieces that do things that Syracuse is not necessarily great at defending.
We didn't even mention, I mean, you threw someone out there, Ward. It's a Nelly Cummings, averaging 11 points per game.
He's the starting point guard, or two guard. I mean, he and Jordan Burns are kind of similar players, but
this team has depth.
He's a Bowling Green transfer that didn't play last year, but I mean, there's potential here. There's potential
for a
Colgate upset in the first win, I think, in the last. This will be the, if Syracuse wins, this will be 54 straight wins against the Raiders for SU. But I don't think it's a gimme like many people thought it was when they looked at the schedule originally. This is the best Colgate team they've played in a long time.
In terms of Syracuse, you said you wanted to see some depth. You wanted to see them play deep tonight. They went 9 deep against Virginia. I'd like to see them go 10 and add
Bobby Braswell.
Let him get some minutes because at the end of the day, especially against Virginia, what was there to lose?
There was nothing to lose.
Absolutely
I don't know. Maybe there was something else behind the scenes that we're not understanding, but I say play him.
I mean, the team made 13 field goals.
Yeah.
13.
You're telling me he couldn't have given you one? Like, Jesse Edwards gave you one and he played like 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. 13 field goals.
It's not good.
In an entire game. 13 of 55 shooting.
Really underrated. I think that we haven't talked about this enough because we talked about the fact that this is the worst worst offensive performance in Dome history, the worst offensive performance in Jim Boeheim's career, offensive performance since World War II. The one thing we're not talking about enough, Cole Anthony, in an ACC game, the number three, I think, recruit
Goodness.
In the country, according to 24/7, he was playing against, it wasn't like he was playing against, like, East Kentucky Tech A&M. Like, he was playing against an improved Notre Dame team with a potential ACC Player of the Year candidate in John Mooney. He scored 34. He scored the same amount of points that Syracuse scored the whole game by himself
as a
freshman.
He did it shooting much more efficiently, too.
It's incredible. I mean, it was not good. We'll see if they can bounce back tonight, but I think Colgate's going to give them more problems than a lot of people think they will.
So, JD, if you had to guess right now, what is the Syracuse starting five, and who on the team gets more than, let's say, 20 minutes?
Starting five, Carey will start. Carey will start. Buddy will start. Elijah will start. The four, I'm going to say they stick with Marek unless something changed. I don't think Marek played a poor game.
No.
And then I think they'll go Baram Sidibe at the five. I think you'll probably see the same starting five. Guys that will play more than 20, Quincy, Maybe? I don't even know. Probably. I think
he only
Quincy,
had 13 against Virginia, but I would expect more.
I think Quincy plays more tonight. I think Joe plays more tonight, and I think Bryson Goodine plays probably 20 as well, and then you'll see Robert Braswell and maybe Jesse Edwards play some minutes as well. It's also dependent on how close this game is, because they're not going to go as deep if Colgate's giving them a run for their money.
Right.
So,
I don't know if it's going to be 20 minutes apiece, but Gerard and Gary have the potential to play over 20 in this one.
Yeah, definitely.
That's obviously based on how Carey performs.
I think
and
they
how
definitely
Boeheim
go
performs.
Over 15. Like 15,
yeah.
I think, is
somewhere in the 15 to 20 range.
Yeah.
Goodine, maybe around 10. If
I'd like to see more minutes from
10
Goodine
to 15,
as well.
Something along those lines.
I would like to see Edwards breach the 10-minute mark, just to kind of see, and maybe that
or John Bolajac, honestly, unless you're planning on redshirting him. Either one of them.
I assume one of them is going to redshirt.
I assume
it seems like a Jock is going to be that situation. But I'd like to just see Edwards a little bit more, and if it doesn't work, then you only played him 5 minutes against Virginia. It's not like you're hurting his minutes. Just give him a little bit of a shot. I'm sure Sidibe will pick up a foul or two. Give him
well,
a little
certainly.
Bit,
or three, or
get
four,
get him a little
or five.
Bit at the end of the first half, and just see how things work out. Because this is with the youth and the new pieces, there are going to be a lot of people that you just have to see how things work. And I think Jesse Edwards' game to see how things work could be tonight.
I know Boeheim really doesn't like to, rotate people in, especially towards the end of the season. You were seeing him go 6-7 deep, but I think early on in the year, I would like to see a lot more subs, a lot more movement, especially with those starters. I don't think you can play Dolezal 40 minutes. If Buddy isn't shooting well, don't play him 35 minutes. I would like to see someone like Goodine rotate in more, somebody like Guerrier rotate in more, somebody like Braswell rotate in more if Dolezal isn't playing all that well. I think especially early on in the season, you've got to see what you got, because there's nothing to lose at this point.
I think the shooting numbers will come back down to earth in this game.
Definitely.
I don't think they're going to shoot as poorly as they did. I don't envision another game where Buddy Boeheim goes, like, what was he,
3 of 12 and 1 of 8 from 3.
Yeah, like, I don't envision that happening. I don't envision Joe Girard going, like, 1 for 4 or whatever he was from
3. 1 for 6, 1 for 4 from 3 for
Joe
Girard.
I don't envision those games being plentiful. So I think definitely playing against a lesser defense, and Colgate's still good defensively. They're not good. They're fine defensively, but I mean anything's a step down from Virginia. So
right.
I think those scoring numbers will go up, and I think too the shooting will be a bit better tonight.
Another stat that I've done a couple of shows since this Virginia game. 7 free throws.
Not good.
Not good at all.
They got to get to the line,
and they missed like 4 of them.
Yeah,
they were bad.
It was really bad. Get to the line more. Make the free throws. We've got a hot take from JD saying Syracuse will shoot above 24% tonight.
Yes.
So,
wow. Scorching.
We'll see if that
scorching
one comes
take.
To fruition.
Cold takes exposed might be coming for me soon.
Syracuse with an opportunity to score more than 34 points in a game tonight. But they do have a kind of a sneaky test tonight hosting Colgate. That one tips
big
off.
Big bye game, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That one
paying
tips
money?
Off.
Money? I don't know.
Didn't work for Kentucky. This
no,
one tips off
not.
At 7 o'clock tonight in the Carrier Dome. Be sure to tune in to 88.3 FM here on WAER starting at 6:30. Get you started with Countdown to Tip-Off. J.D. Rocci will be on the call alongside Jonathan Hoppe. For Owen Valentine and J.D., I'm Brendan Mortensen. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.